I'm the king of the world.
Ooh, who could that be? It's Leo. You're talking about Leonardo DiCaprio, the one and only. Hi, this is Karen from San Francisco.
And this is Alex from Los Angeles, and welcome to Movies That Shaped Us. We are two longtime friends who grew up on opposite ends of the globe with very different backgrounds, but we're both shaped and are still being shaped by the movies we see and love. In this episode, we'll cover a filmmaker, actor, or director who shaped our love of film. And yes, it is time to get into Leo DiCaprio, bringing back that Leo mania. This is an actor that I've loved for a long time. He's like the new De Niro in a way for our generation in terms of watching him grow and what he's able to achieve. So this is definitely really fun. I love a lot of these films. What about you? Like, what's your Leo history?
I feel like this is an actor that we were born in the 80s, but really sort of came into our own in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Like, this is an actor that has sort of grown up with us and we've grown up with him. And I think that's a very unique bond that you have with somebody, because you see them as, oh, this is somebody who's not that much older than we are and is kind of operating at the height of their powers. And I think that's why he's garnered so much goodwill from the very, very beginning. Not to mention, you know, a super talented actor, a very smart actor who's made amazing choices with the movies that he's picked to get it, to build on what you were saying is one of the most iconic filmographies I've ever put together. But I think what's interesting is that as time has gone by and as the movie industry has changed dramatically with franchise movies and then superhero movies and such, this is one actor who's basically stayed to his true mantle of being an actor and working with best auteurs out there. Mm-hmm. Pretty much Marty, actually. And we'll get into this later. There's a part of me that feels like I wish he had branched out more and done more work, because I think that stretches you as an actor more if you work with other kinds of directors. And he has done some of that, but not a whole lot. But the point is that he's sort of built this movie star career not by doing any tentpole movies per se.
Right.
And these are all drama films. At best, there are some movies with some comedic elements to them, but they travel all over the world because they are made amazingly well, but also because he's at the center of them. It's an amazing career. I mean, you compare him to De Niro. I actually would compare him more to, I guess, it's if Jack Nicholson and De Niro had like a child. Because I never consider, I mean, De Niro is obviously an actor, and I guess I didn't watch his movies when he was coming up and was maybe a heartthrob, but I don't think of De Niro and his early phase as a heartthrob phase.
True. That's
right?
True.
Versus
You're right.
Nicholson had that, and DiCaprio was a huge heartthrob in the 90s. Like, you know, it was crazy. I mean, you had cards and posters and merch. I mean, that in itself was a whole industry, you know?
Leomania.
Yeah, from there to then become one of the most celebrated actors of all time is kind of amazing. So actually, I don't even know if Nicholson had that kind of heartthrob, because he also came into the scene pretty late in life and kind of through this kind of, you know, renegade filmmaking with Easy Pieces and what have you. So I guess this career is unparalleled, actually.
The more I think about it, you're right, actually, that I forgot it. I didn't forget, but that heartthrob teen star, you know, every girl would love a Leonardo DiCaprio in the 90s is something that is unique. It's sort of like John Travolta. That's how he started his career. He definitely did not have the same career as Leo, though. But that beginning part of being a teen heartthrob, but then Travolta, he did escape it. And he had, you know, I love Travolta as well. But Leo had a career that mirrored sort of, it's like Jack Nicholson and De Niro's career after being also the biggest star in the world as a teen heartthrob. Like, that is a very hard chasm to get across, of being a teen star that all the girls are obsessed with, but then also becoming a very serious actor who's respected and is working with all the top directors of his whole, you know, generation, the generation before it. That decision he made after Titanic, which when we get into his filmography, I think it'll become even more apparent, was incredibly smart. To your point of, he is, knows what he's doing with his career, and he's very intended and has intentions in everything he's doing. He's not just out there taking any which part or trying to jump on some money bandwagon and being a Superman movie or whatever. He easily could have done all that stuff after he was the biggest star in the world with Titanic, but he chose not to. It's incredible intelligence in how he's managed his career, let alone also his acting chops too, which I think have grown immensely since Titanic.
Absolutely. I mean, there's somebody who's like worked on his craft like immensely. Yeah. And the only person that I think of is Chalamet, you know, sort of mm-hmm. kind of operating in that. And then if Heath Ledger had lived, I think that's the other yes. person I think of who had that heartthrob sort of thing. And then was always an amazing actor and then just became better and better and deeper and deeper. So to get into his filmography, and we always do this, like there are distinct chapters in every actor or director's career. Although as we get into it, this is one career which is just so consistent, which is not something that we often see. So I guess the first phase is obviously his like child actor phase, right? Mm-hmm. So This Boy's Life and Was Eating Gilbert Grape, Basketball Diaries, Marvin's Room, etc. And at a very, very young age, all of these movies, like he's number one in really dramatic, complicated parts. Mm-hmm. Number two, he's going up against veterans, De Niro, Meryl, and Diane Keaton. And there's, you know, there's affectations or transformations and things that play at a, such an early age. You don't see that with child actors. And, you know, you can sort of consider other great child actors who've become great actors. He has those same chops, or some might argue even better. Like he's very cute and adorable as kids yes. are, but there's something very adult-like and unknowing about him, which, you know, sometimes the kid actors, they're trying to pretend to be adults. Like we talked about Christian Bale, at least from my point of view in the Spielberg movie. Versus mm-hmm. this is his Leo's work is actually quite effortless. I think he makes a mark right off the bat. And I think all of these movies are his kind of entry or ticket into who he ends up working with, Scorsese particularly, because he gets, you know, introduced to De Niro and such so early in his career. But yeah, curious, what do you think of this first phase of his career?
Yeah, I also want to shout out his TV career too.
Yeah.
I'd be missed if I don't mention his stint on Growing Pains. I think that really right. was kind of catapulted into that teen heartthrob stardom before even his film career. I think that helped him get a lot of notoriety. So I think coming from TV is something we haven't talked about yet of one of these mm-hmm. you know, actors and directors we've covered so far. Like he definitely made that jump immediately into, like you said, working with all this top tier talent. And actually I have not seen any of these films that he's made, honestly, like pre, I guess, Quick and the Dead. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I can't speak personally to a lot of these films, but I think as you pointed out right early on, working with all of these, the greats, especially De Niro, I think mm-hmm. was as DiCaprio said, was sort of a mentor a lot in Marvin's right. Room. And that was giving him, I think, a lot of education on what it was like to plan a career instead of just acting and taking anything that you can get. I think that mentorship was very important for Leo. And I think also on that film was what De Niro was like, hey, Marty Scorsese, like you got to check out this kid. Like this kid is great. Exactly. Like he's so good. So I think being around those top caliber actors was very helpful to get his career going and get, I think it's less the career go, more of that education on knowing how to plan out a career. Cause I do think he has one of the most planned out in a positive way mm-hmm. careers of any actor right now. Like he's very intelligent about all these decisions mm-hmm. he made. And I think a lot of this could be based because he's in the acting with Meryl and De Niro and all these folks really early on in his career. And he had that drive. He knew this, what he wanted to do was be a very talented actor.
And I think also like working on your craft and these materials are heavy materials and being drawn to those at an early, early age. So yeah, this career planning, but also taking the craft seriously, which is obviously all these amazing legends probably showed him. Romeo and Juliet at the end of the 90s, as we approach Titanic, is a big one. I've actually never seen that movie, so I can't speak to it, but I know how much that means to people. And that's sort of kind of, I would think, at right, if not at the apex, but right there when it comes to teen heartthrob and this whole generation, like our generation, sort of seeing what it is to be in love and what it feels like. And of course, it's Baz who kind of ratchets us up, you know, to the most extreme possible. But yeah, this is a big one, I would imagine.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is the start of the second phase, if we were to have one for Leo, which is his teen heartthrob phase, for sure. And this movie, which I love this movie, I saw it as a kid when it came out, and it also made me think, oh my god, this Leo guy is super cool. Even though, despite being a young teen boy at the time, you're supposed to hate Leo. Like the amount of hatred on the boy side of it, because you're always supposed to hate the teen girl heartthrob. So everyone I knew was like, oh, Leo sucks. We hate Leo. But I'm like, actually, this movie, first of all, is amazing, and second of all, he's actually, you know, pretty good in this, kind of like, for what they need, for what Baz is trying to do with this character of Romeo. I think Leo nails it. The acting, not great, honestly, like if you look at it from a very like objective level, but he works in this film, and I definitely recommend you seeing this at some point.
I know
you're not as big of a Baz fan as I am, but
I'm okay.
This movie is what made me obsessed with Baz Luhrmann, and like, this was definitely the beginning of Leo just being on every teen girl's lunchboxes and all the stuff that there was.
bedroom walls,
everything, right? Trapper Keepers got the stickers on there. Leo. This was really it was building up in that first phase, but this is what really lit the thing on fire. And it's still, the movie holds up. I mean, I watch it every so often, at least once a year. It's a really fun watch.
Okay, I'll check it out. And then, of course, right after this comes the little unknown movie, Titanic, that sort of blows everything apart. And what can even one say about Titanic that hasn't been said? It's Jim, it's filmmaking, it's this epic story, it's a love story, it's totally transformative. And I think here, I mean, I had not watched any of Leo's movies before Titanic. I don't even know who he was until this movie. This is my introduction to Leo. And you can sort of see that the heartthrobness, but also an actor who is living apart. You see that, who's not swallowed by the spectacle of the movie.
Exactly.
It's very much an acting role, which, you know, didn't really have to be per se. And that's partly Jim, but I think it's also him and Kate. And that's the other thing I should mention, is amazing friendship and partnership between those two. And the movie is just absolutely epic. You know, I was still in India at that time, and if you had not watched Titanic multiple times, or if you had not sung the song at some venue, like people like me who used to sing at that time, what were you doing with your life? Like, this was synonymous, unanimous, ubiquitous, everywhere. And I think what's important to call out is, again, is that Leo and Kate, they stood on their own with the movie, which is so hard to do. Like, the movie was overpowering anyway, but it's not that the movie swallowed them. Like, they got to build their own persona and their own stardom, and also stand on actor feet, not just celebrity feet.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, this is one of my favorite movies of all time. I think it's a masterpiece, and definitely, I remember I saw it 9 times in the theater over the course of 3 months. And it was, you could tell there was that Leo, like the audience, half the audience would be teen girls there for like the 14th time, because they just want to catch a glimpse of Leo. So this was the height of Leo mania, to the point where, I mean, it's crazy thinking back to that. And there's no one even close to this now in terms of the obsession that people had. But in terms of this movie and him, I think what makes him work so well in this film, there's a lot of really interesting gender dynamics in this movie. And he, in a way, plays sort of a typical female role in the relationship. He's kind of effeminate. He's the artist. He doesn't really take charge as much as Rose does. He sort of is a little more worldly, but she feels almost more intelligent and playing more of like a typical masculine role in terms of their dynamic between the two of them. And I think that's what made Leo work so well in this part. He's not like a macho guy who's going to, you know, come in here and fight physically to get the girl. He's kind of weedy guy who's got a very feminine look, nice hair. It's not something you typically would, at the time at least, subscribe to a leading man sort of masculine role. And I think that's what works so well in this character of Jack. Like, their dynamic is a little different than what you would expect. And just Leo, I think, works really well in this movie. It's a crime that he was not nominated for an Oscar, honestly. I know he was pissed off about it and never really went back to the Academy Awards after this. And I don't think it's fair. Like, I think he was disparaged because he got all that attention and he was the teen heartthrob. So the Academy, and I think a lot of the press and the critics at the time, were dismissing him because he's just Leo. It's Leo mania. He just is adding like girls' box office dollars, and that's it. He adds a lot more than that. And the more and more I see this film, and the years have passed since the Leo mania has sort of faded, you really see the beginnings of just an excellent actor in this performance.
Yeah, but I get it, because I think she has more to do, and it's easy to get lost. And so I get it why she is nominated and he wasn't. He also looks very young in this movie.
Yes, he does.
Even when I watched it the first time, I was like, he looks like a baby in this movie. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he has been to the Academy Awards after. I mean, he won finally and such. And we'll talk about that. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, the whole movement of Ghibli and Oscar kind of became its own thing. But yeah, so after Titanic, we are sort of in, I guess, the continuation of the second phase of teen heartthrob. You've been in the biggest movie in the world. What do you do next? All eyes are on you. And I think these next few movies are an interesting bunch where I think he's trying different things. He's working mm-hmm. with different directors, Man in the Iron Mask, Celebrity with Woody Allen, The Beach that we covered earlier with Danny Boyle. I think they're all mildly successful to a degree. I mean, he's usually good in most things, but these are not home runs. The movies are okay in my mind. And it's a hard place to be at for sure. You know, you've been in the biggest movie in the world. What do you do next? I am very grateful that he didn't launch into some, you know, franchise movie dumb, which again, I think the mentorship and all that we talked about earlier came in handy. Instead, he was working with auteurs to try different things, a period drama, you know, a comedy and kind of a sci-fi adventure movie. So I love the swings here, but the movies are okay. What is your thought on the spirit of his?
Yeah, I think this is, again, more of the industry and maybe even him too, not knowing exactly how to deal with what he is, his star persona. He was trying a lot of things, most of them unsuccessful, like you said.
Yeah.
We did cover The Beach in our travel episode, episode 16, which looking back, actually, I do really like this film. I think he's good in it, but it was a big flop at the time. Mm-hmm. And everyone thought, oh, maybe this guy's washed up. Maybe all he was just a teen heartthrob, had one Titanic movie. So I think this is his floundering a little bit and trying to figure out, okay, well, what do I actually want to do? Because I'm sure he was given every script in town after Titanic. He could have done anything. And this is him just still figuring out what he wanted to do. I don't think he was still young, right? He didn't really have that, okay, no, I want to only work with Marty or only work with, you know, these top tier directors. He hasn't really gotten to that yet. Not that I'm disparaging Woody Allen or Danny Boyle, but it was very different than the, I actually think almost like the final, or, you know, the next phase at least of his career, where every director he's working with is like a AAA, a world renowned, you know, director whose filmography stands the test of time. So yeah, right now he's not really in that yet. It's interesting, but forgettable, honestly. If you don't watch any of the movies in this phase of his career, you're not really missing much in terms of performances.
I totally agree. I mean, the Woody one also is interesting because, you know, his movies are hits or they're a hit or miss, especially in that time. And it's an ensemble. It's, again, I applaud Leo for making these choices, working with fun people. I think the other thing also at play is that he's not a boy, not a man. Britney's song, essentially.
Yes. That's a good point too to bring up. Yeah, he has that baby face you mentioned for a very long time and can't escape that Jack sort of young, free teen boy thing.
Yeah.
That's a really good point.
It's hard to cast you. What do you cast? I mean, like, I still remember, I've never seen Man in the Iron Mask, but I remember his stills from the end trailer of the movie with like long hair and period costume. And I was like, this just is not working at all.
Yeah. I have a soft spot for that. I have a soft spot for that movie that actually was funny. That was, so Titanic was number one at the box office for like 30 weeks. And the only thing that would dethrone it was this. When another Leo movie came in, that was the first movie to knock out Titanic was Man in the Iron Mask. It's very forgettable, but I sort of like the swashbuckler genre. And I think it's a fine film. I mean, you know,
okay.
If you see it on TV or pass it on like your streaming cube, you know, check it out. It's not, you're not going to have a bad time. I'll tell you that.
Okay. That's good to know. But yeah, I applaud him for also just keeping his, you know, head on his shoulders, because after Titanic, like, again, you could just make poor decisions from a movie standpoint, but also poor decisions from a life standpoint. And the fact that he stays in the game, like, there are no stories of like Leo just losing his mind to drugs or what have you in this period is pretty remarkable. And he often talks about his mom, and it sounds like he's had a pretty sort of, you know, connected relationship there, it seems.
True, though I will state too that at this time he partied incredibly hard. I don't think he would have had the career he had if the internet had existed in the same way that it did. Mm. He got away with a lot. I mean, Wolf of Wall Street, that we'll get to that film, but that was his life during this time, with all the women, all the yachts, all the parties, all the time. He had a little posse that I can't say the name of it on the podcast, but that they would go around and they were notorious club goers. And but it wasn't in the same way that now there'd be like Instagram shots and even this, and we did the TMZ didn't exist. And it was just a different time where he could get away with a lot of things. He was very lucky because he was a major, major party animal, like huge during this time, which again, I don't blame him. You're a young 20-year-old who is now the biggest movie in the world. But yeah, he did have his head on shoulders in terms of his career. He never, you know, obviously that can, there's a lot of young actors who let that kind of get into their heads and all they do is party and they don't do anything else. So he definitely had the balance there, but I do want to, look up his party days. They're very infamous around Hollywood.
Wow, that's good to know. I mean, which explains like his dating history sort of, you know, that continues essentially. Yes. So maybe this is where it started, like the yachts and the models and what have you. And it's sort of interesting that even though now we live in the internet era and everything is sort of dissected and what have you, Leo sort of almost has like a free pass, you know, it seems that. Of course, he's made fun of that. Oh, here's another 22-year-old that you sort of walked all over, and there's a new 22-year-old, you know, that's already in. But for some reason, if somebody else were doing this, they would not be able to escape it.
True.
But he can.
That's true.
It's interesting how he sort of, I don't know if he's earned it or not, but it's just is what it is. To get back to his filmography, so yeah, I think it's sort of mid-2000s is when I think the pre-Titanic phase of sort of floundering and such starts to get back on track. And I think to me, this starts with Catch Me If You Can.
Yes.
Which we covered in the adventure movie episode. I think this is like an underrated a Spielberg best, but also an underrated Leo best. I think this to me is kind of him elevating his sort of charm and teenage heartthrob status that was from Titanic and sort of really leveling that up with a lot of complicated feelings, issues with your dad and chasing the dream or what have you. It's sort of a grown-up performance for somebody who is a teen heartthrob. And this is sort of right at the cusp of that. And everything from there on now are adult roles in my mind.
I agree. And I think the thing that's interesting about this is the character he plays is a kid who's pretending to be adults in the movie. And I think Spielberg, to his genius, cast a kid or an 100%. Actor who looks like a kid, but is trying to, he has the talent to be an adult actor and trying to kind of be bigger than his britches. And that's why that work,
and
works
gets
so
away.
Well in that, and he gets away with it. It works so well in that movie because he can play both. He can play like, oh, he's just an innocent little boy who is doing these things that are wrong and immature in terms of pretending to be all these different people. But he actually has the acting shots to pull it off. But I agree with you. I think this is definitely the beginning of this phase where you just look at this filmography and every single director that he's working with is one of the all-time like greats, like top 10, top 15 working directors of the time. It's incredible what he's able to do. And it really does start here.
So yeah, I think the next sort of 5 years is sort of the next phase where now he's an adult actor. Mm-hmm. This is where the collaboration with Marty is sort of really cemented with Gangs of New York, The Aviator, Departed. All of these are celebrated leading man parts that establish him as an actor who's a grown up now. And they're all Marty collaborations. He's also works with a bunch of other great directors, Blood Diamond, Body of Lies, Revolutionary Road that we covered in one of our episodes earlier. So a pretty good run, I would say. And I think we all root for Leo as an actor, as a leading man. Like I said, it's because of this phase, I think. And this is where it could have all gone wrong if he'd not sort of, you know, transitioned from that heartthrob phase into an actual leading man phase.
I agree. And again, I think it's the credit to him to decide to, once he works with Marty, to work with Sam Mendes and to work with Ed Zwick and to work with Ridley Scott. Like, these are directors that he could trust to make sure that he's able to pull off what he thinks he's pulling off instead of have to be the one making all the decisions or the one that's in the creative driving seat. He's putting himself in the place where he knows he's going to get that support from these top tier, you know, world-class directors. I think that's really to his credit. As an actor that he's like, yeah, okay, I need to make sure I'm still surrounded by the best. I can't go out on my own at this point. And maybe he never will, I don't think. He has never really done that
yet.
I think that's to his credit as a very smart guy who's really planning his career.
Totally. And that continues with working with Nolan for Inception, which probably is his first sort of out and out sort of science fiction, sort of thrillery kind of movie. There's Django there as well with Tarantino. There's Gatsby back with Baz Luhrmann. So once again, the auteur-driven vehicles carry on. The only kind of miss in my mind in his filmography in general, but especially in this phase of working with amazing directors, is J. Edgar.
Agreed.
Clint Eastwood. And I remember when that movie came out, this is the only movie where he's, I think, played like prosthetics and transformational sort of, you know, typical fair kind of performance. He's not really done that much. And I remember when that movie came out, I sort of was even looking back at his other movies with Marty, and I was like, I'm sort of getting bored of Leo. It's sort of the same phase, same kind of intense actory kind of movie, like lighten up a little bit, you know, like all your movies are intense. And I also kind of weirdly didn't find him very, I don't know, attractive or good looking either. Cause I remember this phase, like his face just felt very bloated to me. It was like a big sort of face, like in that period from the heartthrob teenage years, I guess, transition into an adult in that phase, for some reason, was just not very appealing to me. So I don't know. I admire these movies for the directors, but not so much for Leo. And we'll come very quickly to what changed that for me. But curious if that resonates with you at all or no.
It does, in the sense of these films, while again, he's working with some of the best directors in the world, aren't necessarily the best directors' work. For me, Inception far and away is the one that stands out, because that movie is incredible and someone top tier Nolan. And I think Leo adds a lot of the heart and soul that's necessary to make that movie work. But yeah, beyond that, a lot of these other films are fine. I think to your point, though, J. Edgar is definitely the nadir of this period. That movie just doesn't really work for all the reasons you stated. But the next very quickly gets into, I think, some of the most interesting stuff that he does and starts lightening up, which I think really helps a lot in terms of what you were mentioning. These movies are very dour. All of them are very dour and serious. And maybe that was him trying to, again, shed his boy persona. These are all serious movies doing serious man things instead of even Catch Me If You Can, which is a fun romp. He's like, no more romps. I got to be serious because I'm chasing an Oscar perhaps during this time.
Yeah. And I think what breaks that streak really is Wolf of Wall Street, which I probably think is probably his best movie, his best performance.
Best performance. Yeah. Definitely.
Not best movie, best performance. It's like a banger. It's such a complex, layered performance. You see all aspects of him, the lightness, the charm, the serious intensity, the physical comedy, the physical nature of the performance in general. I think it's his greatest Marty pairing as well to date. We haven't seen Killers of the Flower Moon yet. So yeah, this changed everything for me. It's like, oh, Leo is back. Actually, he always was here. He never went away. I just wasn't looking in the same direction.
Yeah, and he's having fun again.
Yeah.
You know, which he in Django, I think, is starting to the beginning of that. I mean, that movie is very comedic despite its subject matter. And Leo is a source of absolute hilarious. I mean, some of those lines in that movie are just so funny. But Wall Street is unbelievable. It rests on all these monologues, especially just Leo giving these monologues to the rest of his investor team. Those three monologues are some of like his best work. So funny, so full of energy. And he helps make that movie kind of watchable because he adds a fun element to these people that are total despicable human beings who don't deserve any redemption or forgiveness at all. They deserve to, you know, be locked away and, you know, lock up and throw away the key. But having Leo have so much fun in this, you're sort of rooting for him because he's Leo. He's having a party time. This is again where I think that 90s sort of party side of him, he's reliving that through this role. I think is why he can give so much life to this. He's like, I've done this before. I know how to play Jordan Belfort because I lived this myself in the 90s.
Totally. And then, you know, carrying on with this new phase that Wolf of Wall Street starts, the phase that we're still in, I think, which is the phase of The Revenant and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Don't Look Up. These are all movies. Well, Revenant, I would say, is maybe hearkening back to the dour past. And, you know, this movie obviously gets him his Oscar. Finally, people are like, okay, there you go. You have it. Right. You know, it's a technical achievement for sure for Chivo and what the team kind of went through putting this movie together. But as a movie, I'm okay on this. I've never probably will watch it again. But its technical achievement is definitely marvelous, I would say. But I think Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is probably, I think, the crown jewel of this phase that starts with Wolf of Wall Street in my mind. Because now this is somebody who is having fun, but there's also there's like a tragedy to this character. There's machismo and the leading man stuff going on, but there's also other, you know, dealing with adulthood and such, or getting older. There's a lot of that sort of stuff that's at play. So I love this one specifically. And he's kind of topped his best performance in my mind with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, this is a movie I love, absolutely love. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. And his, it's this combination of vulnerability and insecurity that he brings into the character that is something he doesn't usually do. It's well, I shouldn't say that. I guess some of those adult roles were in that phase we talked about, that definitely those characters are not like self-assured king of the world,
but they were much, you know, harder winners. Exterior, like the dour phase movies you're talking about.
Yes. And it just, he brings something to that Once Upon a Time in Hollywood character. It's like he's old enough now as an actor and with a big enough career that he's sort of bringing that into this character in a way. And you can see for the first time, it's sort of some metatextual commentary on Leo, and that is he was a big star in the 90s, and yeah, he's won the Oscar, but he's kind of a has-been, and what is he doing now? And I'm sure these are things that he wrestles with, especially as a guy who clearly, because of his dating history of not dating anyone over the age of what, 25, 26, he has an issue with growing old. Usually that is why people like staying in romantic relationship with people younger than them, because they're afraid of their own mortality and their own aging. And that's a big theme in this movie too, with the character that he plays of an old, like popular, not really movie star, but he was a hit, had some hits, and now he's in the outs, and it's like wrestling with his career, wrestling with getting older. And these are a lot of things I think Leo is thinking about too, perhaps. And that's why he works so well in this film. And, you know, I actually really like The Revenant. I know it's sort of now coming out of favor and people dump on it a lot. I think it's actually great still. But with that being said, I wish that he'd won the Oscar for Wolf of Wall Street or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Like, these two performances are, I think, his best that he's ever done, both of them. And I wish he'd gotten recognition for those instead of The Revenant, which, again, a fantastic performance. And I really like the film, but it's a more showy, like, look at what I had to go through to do this, as opposed to look at the pathos that I'm bringing to this character.
Totally agree, which is sort of what ends up getting rewarded anyway. So it's no surprise, but I don't hate that win. I think it's very
Me neither. But, no, it's a totally justifiable win for sure.
Yeah. And so, I mean, we're now excited for the new one, Killers of the Flower Moon, and whatever he does next. Speaking of, what do you think he should do next?
Yeah, this is a tough one, because again, he's been working with the best directors working today. So it's not like that's something he needs to do. I don't think he should be doing television, or he needs to go into another medium. I think he definitely owns this. And actually, Don't Look Up, his last on-screen performance that we actually covered in our bonus episode of Best Films of 2021, I think is a more interesting performance that he gives there, where he's sort of a pushing away everything that made Leo Leo. He's like an academic who's not attractive, sort of a normal everyday kind of guy, nothing special going on in, you know, a satire slash comedy. I thought that was breaking down every persona that he has. So I don't think he has room to go there. Maybe it would, I mean, he's never done a broad comedy before, and that would be interesting to see what he could do with something like that. I don't know who he would team with, maybe another Adam McKay vehicle, though Adam McKay seems to have moved away from broad comedies. I don't think he's making Anchorman 3 anytime soon.
No.
But I do wonder what Leo could do in the comedic space. However, that being said, comedy movies are sort of not happening anymore either. So maybe you could bring him back. Who knows? A comedy, like a broad comedy, a real broad comedy, I think he could do something interesting with. What do you think? What would you love to see him do?
Yeah, comedy is what I was thinking about too. But I think my pick is a romance, you know? Like, what would the only romance that he's done really is Titanic, I think.
Yeah, or the,
I
guess, ultimate romance, Juliet,
the ultimate.
Oh, romance. Yeah, both of them are the ultimate romance. He's right. Yeah, you can't get more romance than Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, which is why I think, like, bringing him back, but now more as an older person and creating like a romance for this generation that he's a part of, and maybe reuniting with Kate. And this is why probably Revolutionary Road failed, because people thought that, oh, this is going to be the two of them coming back again, and this would be like a swooning romance, and it's nothing but that. Far from it, really. So I think that could be interesting, like working in like a drama comedy, but has like a huge romance. I don't know who would direct it, because again, those movies are not being made very often. Like, I would love to see him in a Nancy Myers movie. Maybe that'll get her to a $200 million budget.
Because he'll take half of it.
True. All right, so that was our conversation on Leo. Hope you enjoyed this discussion. And as always, we are available on all podcasting platforms. Your support really helps us get discovered. So like us, subscribe us. We're also available on YouTube, where you can also catch individual reviews of our movies. And until next time, we'll see you at the movies, I guess, with Little the Flower Moon.
See you there.
Anybody order fried sauerkraut?